And a very good morning to you. Welcome to the Papers Podcast for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. It's election day in the UK. Not in the UK. Say it right, Baldy. It's election day, local election day in England and in Wales. Yes. Polls open in England and in Wales at 7 a.m. Elections in 107 local authorities. There are 11 mayoral races too. There's a by-election in Blackpool. And voters can elect police and crime commissioners. 37 such jobs up for grabs. So you'll be hearing a lot about it, not during the day, because the broadcasters are forbidden from discussing the issues around the local elections. But after 10 p.m. this evening, good start, Richie. After 10 p.m., they'll begin their when the polls have closed, the BBC and Sky News will go into overdrive, bringing results, and they'll have all manner of experts opining on what the results mean for the major parties. So, local election. And I think for the first time, you'll need to bring photo ID if you are voting in person. Isn't that right? For the first time, you've got to take photo ID with you, which has been controversial, I think. But if you're voting, remember to take your photo ID, a valid form of photo ID. There are 22 different types of valid photo IDs, apparently, that you might want to take with you, passport, driving license, and then apparently there are many others. So there you are, local elections. Let's forget about them and talk about the papers. The front page of The Guardian. Straight to the front pages. Labour faces criticism over loophole in plan to ban 0 hours contracts. This is a big deal. Labour is facing criticism, says The Guardian, over a loophole that would allow employees to work under 0 hours contracts, despite Labour having pledged to ban them entirely. What is a 0 hour contract? It's pretty simple, really. It's a contract where an employer is not obliged to provide any minimum number of working hours. So you're working for a company, but it isn't obliged to give you any minimum number of working hours. Labour says it's terrible, we're going to do away with it. But there is a loophole in Labour's plans, according to The Guardian, where the employee could opt to stay on a 0 hours contract if he or she chose to do so. The Guardian says this could bring about a power imbalance that employers, bosses, could exploit to pressure workers into accepting these 0 hour contracts and thus accepting insecurity around pay and working hours. So criticism from some unions as well this morning, saying Labour said they would ban 0 hours contracts and now they're inserting a loophole which will allow them to remain. Yes. Political party bullshitting. Who'd have thought it? Also on the front page of The Guardian, photographs from student protests at US universities in Los Angeles and in New York. These are pro-Palestinian protests. The Daily Express, heartbroken family pay tribute to wonderful child. The boy who was killed in that crazy sword attack on Tuesday has been named. He's Daniel Angerin, young lad, God love him, 14 years old he was when he was murdered on Tuesday. A man has been arrested. He will appear in front of a judge this morning and he will be charged with murder and attempted murder. The young lad was apparently a very gifted football player. Dreadful stuff. He was the son of a teacher, this young kid, Daniel Angerin. A number of front pages referencing that story this morning. The Daily Star, "We're going to need a bigger Lilo," is the headline. A Lilo is an inflatable thing that people lie on when they're bathing in shallow waters, usually by the seaside. And the Star says, "We're going to need a bigger Lilo." The story is, shark experts believe that a great white shark might be prowling off the Sussex coast after a mother spotted a pretty big fin in the water. We're going to need a bigger Lilo. That's a reference to the film Jaws, isn't it? We're going to need a bigger boat was the claim. Who said that? Was it Roy? Was it the lead character who said it? I think it was. It wasn't Richard Dreyfuss. So there's a shark off the coast of Sussex. Dearie me. The Times, Labour plan for Channel migrants to get asylum. This is a story in the Times that alleges, again, if Labour forms the next government, that it will immediately grant asylum to 50,000 people to clear the backlog of asylum applications in the country. That's a story in the Times. Also on the front page of the Times, after clashes in US, British students begin their Gaza sit-ins. We'll come back to that. The Daily Mirror also has a photograph of young Daniel Angerin. Our hearts are broken. It's a quote from his family. His family are understandably devastated about it, saying he was a gentle kid, loved his football, and he was a good student. The Daily Mail, also a photograph of Daniel. Headline, Day That Rwanda Became a Reality. So the Daily Mail, obviously a Conservative Party supporting newspaper, is saying that the Rwanda scheme to send asylum seekers off to Rwanda is going to become a success, and it is a reality after migrants were filmed being handcuffed and detained in raids in parts of the UK yesterday. So the Mail says, this is great, we're getting the migrants on planes. The Sun headline is Trent and Jude Law's Girl. And that's a story about the Liverpool and England football player Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's apparently dating, or he has been seen out with, the daughter of Jude Law. That's the front page, would you believe, of The Sun. The Daily Telegraph, Ireland sends police to border in migrant row. We've been discussing this on the Richie Allen Show and on the Papers podcast. The Daily Telegraph says the Irish Prime Minister, Simon Harris, and Rishi Sunak, the UK, his UK counterpart, are at loggerheads after a plan was hatched by Ireland to send police to the border to prevent migrants coming into the Republic of Ireland from the north. And that's the Telegraph lead story. The iPaper, UK-Rwanda plan could be delayed as civil servants sue government. But that's self-explanatory. Financial Times also goes with the Zero Hours contract story, which we talked about a moment ago, which is on the front page of The Guardian. Labour to dilute promises on workers' rights in push to win business backing is the Financial Times story, a lead story. The Metro leads with Our Fresh Sorrow. And that's again about young Daniel Angerin and his murder. The Metro, yeah. The Daily Express, boy for... That's yesterday. Yeah, okay. I'm going to yesterday's papers now. What's wrong with me? So you're listening to the Papers Podcast with me, Richie Allen, Thursday morning, May 2nd, 2024. Let's have a look inside the papers and see what we see. Let's go to that story in the Times then about British students holding Gaza sit-in. So if you've been watching your BBC or Sky News or any 24-hour news channel, they're featuring these protests at US campuses pretty heavily, a lot of coverage of them. Violence has broken out in Los Angeles and New York. We saw in Columbia University, the students occupied a building. They were dragged out by the police. Arrests have been made. It's pretty contentious there. It's a febrile atmosphere at some of these universities where students are saying, look, we're demanding that our university severs ties with people and with businesses who themselves are connected to the Israeli government. This is all about the genocide in Gaza. Now, according to the Times, what's happening in the US is spilling over into the UK. It says the Times today that pro-Palestinian groups are setting up protest camps at universities across Britain in an effort to replicate the disorder on campuses in the US. As violence broke out on the other side of the Atlantic, on Wednesday, students at Russell Group universities, including Manchester, Leeds, Bristol, Sheffield and Newcastle, pitched tents and erected anti-Israel signs. Organisers said that the actions had been inspired by those in the US, where weeks of fractious demonstrations against Israel's war in Gaza have divided campuses. More camps are due to be set up at unis, including Lancaster, Swansea and Edinburgh. One group said the protests were loosely coordinated. The activists are saying they will not leave their campuses until universities, which they accuse of being complicit in genocide, meet demands including ending investment in Israeli companies and in defence companies that sell equipment to Israel. The surprise campus protest started in conjunction with trade union-led events across the UK, including a blockade of the Department for Business and Trade in London. So this is interesting, and you wonder how far will students take these protests here in the UK. But the Times is all over it. The broadcast media is talking about it this morning and continues to report on the situations at Yale University, at Columbia, and schools in Texas and in California as well. Here in the UK, anti-Semitism monitoring organisations say the sit-in protests here are likely to be smaller and, more importantly, less confrontational than the ones in the US. So that's The Times. Now, The Guardian, let's look inside The Guardian. The Guardian has an exclusive. And this is really, really interesting, right? Headline is, "Trawl for unsafe criminal convictions in UK being done by interns." Listen to this. Interns have been given the job of weeding out potential wrongful convictions for rape and murder in a major case review prompted by Andrew Malkinson's exoneration, The Guardian can reveal. Now, Andrew Malkinson was wrongly convicted of rape. He spent 17 years in jail for a rape. This happened back in 2003. There was no DNA linking him to the crime whatsoever, and he was exonerated last year after fresh forensic testing of a sample of the victim's clothes linked to another man whose DNA was on the police database. So this is really interesting. Interns have been given the job of weeding out potential wrongful convictions. The Miscarriage of Justice body, the Criminal Cases Review Commission, or CCRC, said last month that it would be re-examining cases it had previously refused to refer to the Court of Appeal to check for new DNA testing opportunities. Now, an internal CCRC board paper seen by the Guardian newspaper shows that its newly announced forensic trawling exercise has so far been carried out by interns who have begun the process of whittling down historic cases that could be sent for further DNA testing. This is madness, really, when you think about it. So on the one hand, the CCRC, the Criminal Cases Review Commission, good news, right? Last month, let's re-examine cases that we had previously refused to re-examine. Let's look at cases where there might be new opportunities to test DNA. Let's do that, all very well. But they've given interns the job of deciding which cases could be sent for further DNA testing and which cases could not. That's mental, really. Not a very sophisticated way of putting it, Richie. But it is crazy, isn't it? It is crazy. So Emily Bolton, the solicitor who looked after the Andrew Malkinson's case, his case, and was instrumental in his exoneration, she said, given the seriousness of this review, it is concerning that so far the work has been done mainly by interns. Now, this paper seen by The Guardian says there are about 8,000 other serious potential miscarriages of justice. 8,000 serious potential miscarriages of justice not being considered because the CCRC has limited the scope of the exercise to rape and murder convictions. So there may be 8,000 other people in jail wrongfully, but there won't be any other, there won't be further testing of DNA or a re-examining of the cases because they were not rape or murder, because they were crimes, there were other types of crimes basically. Amazing stuff this. Interns making the decision on which cases could be reviewed again and might be suitable for further DNA testing. And 8,000 people who have maybe been the victim of serious miscarriages of justice won't have their cases reconsidered because for the moment the scope is only to open up rape and murder convictions. That's an exclusive in The Guardian and it's quite an extraordinary story. TheGuardian.com/GB, I think, if you want to read that story. It's a very detailed story in The Guardian today. The Telegraph, let's have a look. Breastfeeding charity suspends trustees who want to ban trans women from its services. Trans women are men, right? You know this. Six trustees of a nationwide breastfeeding support group have been suspended because they demanded that biological men be excluded from their services. Now, the British wing of La Leche League, La Leche League, LLL, which gives mother-to-mother support to women finding it hard to breastfeed, has been told by its US-based board of directors that the service cannot be single-sex and they must support male lactation, which is fucking disgusting, isn't it? So six trustees have been suspended because they demanded that this charity, which helps mums who find it hard to breastfeed, must allow biological men access to service. So they've been told by the board of directors, which are based in America, you can't have a single-sex service. It must be open to men who want to lactate too. Men have to take a number of horrible chemicals and hormones in order to produce milk. This is really fucking disgusting. I mean, it really is, isn't it? And it's vaudeville. I can't think of any other way to put it. It's crazy. Jesus, Mary and Holy Saint Joseph. Shall we just move on from that? It's horrendous, isn't it? Yeah, lactation can be induced in men by taking hormones such as estradiol and progesterone. People are being suspended for saying, listen, let's reserve this charity's time. I'm sure time is at a premium. Let's reserve spaces where we offer support to people, excuse me, where we offer support to women who are finding it difficult to breastfeed. Let's reserve those spaces for women, for actual women who've had the babies, you know. Mad stuff. I'm going to stay with The Guardian because there are slim pickings in the tabloids, not much in the tabloids. Go back to The Guardian for the moment. Reform UK backs candidates who promoted online conspiracy theories. This is an interesting story in The Guardian, right? And we're seeing a number of stories, not just in The Guardian, but elsewhere, you know, about who is and who isn't suitable for public office and who should be allowed and who shouldn't be allowed to run for office and whether parties should be very, very careful when selecting candidates to stand in elections, whether they be local elections or European Union, well, not, there won't be any EU elections here, of course, the UK anymore, but national elections. What are their views? And are their views suitable, you know, to warrant them being selected for parties to stand in various elections? So Reform UK backs candidates who promoted online conspiracy theories. What The Guardian has done here, bit of a witch hunt, really. It's named and shamed in this article a number of candidates who will be standing for Reform UK, which is headed up by Richard Tice, and its honorary president is Nigel Farage. So the article names and shames a number of these candidates for having problematic views. Okay, So the article says, among the views the party has publicly backed, I mean, listen to that language. Among the views the party has publicly backed are Chris Farmer's claim that the climate emergency was invented as cover for a plan to install dictators in positions of power. Right? The candidate Farmer has also said that a group of mayors representing the world's leading cities are trying to use the climate emergency to justify banning people from travelling by private car. So the Guardian says this guy's not suitable for office because he believes the climate emergency is a plan to install dictators in positions of power, and that mayors in leading cities are using the climate emergency to try and get people out of private cars. The article goes on to name Trevor Lloyd Jones, claiming that he has promoted content online relating to the 15-minute city conspiracy theory. He's the party's candidate in Aldershot. The Guardian says he has spread anti-vaccine content on Facebook, as well as a post falsely claiming the former Health Secretary Matt Hancock killed pensioners with midazolam and called it COVID. I wonder why Matt Hancock hasn't sued Trevor Lloyd-Jones for libel. That's an interesting one, isn't it? If Trevor Lloyd-Jones has accused Hancock of murdering pensioners with the drug midazolam and then claiming that their deaths were down to COVID, I wonder why Hancock hasn't sued him for libel. Maybe Trevor Lloyd-Jones doesn't have any money. I don't know. Maybe he does. The Guardian says Reform has also backed Lynn Murphy in Easington, where she will be a candidate, because she referred to a make-believe climate crisis, saying, she said, you are deluded if you think the world is going to end due to climate change. It's fascinating, this, isn't it? The rise of this type of thing, you know, that you should be excluded from, whether it's running for office in a political race, or whether it's excluded from, I don't know, working for a company or teaching in a school or whatever, because you hold what they call problematic or troublesome views. It's arrived, hasn't it, that type of censorship and madness. That's in The Guardian today. I said there's slim pickings in the tabloids, and that's the case today. It's often the case on election day, as I mentioned, local elections in England and Wales, not much in the papers. But The Sun, pubs to stay open late for Euros in huge boost for punters. So the European Championships will take place in Germany this summer. England has qualified, as has Scotland, as far as I know. Not Wales, though. No, I don't think Wales made it. The Republic of Ireland, sadly, didn't make it. Northern Ireland, I don't think, sadly, didn't make it either. So it's England and Scotland. Fans will have more time to cheer on the Three Lions, James Cleverly hinted yesterday. He's the current Home Secretary. You see, Germany is on CET, Central European Time. We're on British Summer Time. So the UK would be an hour behind Germany. And if games run on late into extra time and penalties, punters will want to drink a little bit later into the evening. And of course, publicans will want to serve them drink, because these tournaments are an opportunity for publicans to make a few extra bob, a bit more money during these times. So Cleverly was on a podcast yesterday, and he hinted that he might do this. He said he will certainly look into it, allowing pubs to stay open until 1 a.m. if the home nations make it to the knockout stages, whereby you might see extra time and penalties. The Sun confirming Germany is 1 hour ahead of UK time, meaning fans can watch evening kickoffs over a pint without having to leave the pub if the game goes deep into extra time and penalties. So there you are. So if you plan to be heading out during the summer to watch the football, you might be able to stay in the pubs a bit longer than you would ordinarily have been allowed. Now, Matt Ridley has written an opinion piece in The Telegraph. I want to share a bit of it with you. The true tragedy of the COVID-19 vaccines is the headline accompanying this opinion piece. Now, he begins, Matt Ridley, the article, his opinion piece, by declaring vaccination to be one of mankind's most miraculous innovations. His opinion, not mine. He says the eradication of smallpox and the retreat of measles and other cruel afflictions can be attributed to the genius of vaccines. Vaccines, he said, rival sanitation for first prize in the saving of lives. New jabs against malaria and melanoma promise great benefits, he says. He says this is all the more reason to worry that COVID vaccines may have tarnished the technology's reputation. He says COVID vaccines may have harmed, may have damaged the reputation of vaccines to be, you know, to be a very useful tool in dealing with poor health and with preventing poor health. Now he goes on to write, sadly this is behind a paywall, the Telegraph, vaccines never have been without some side effects and risks. They are harm reduction interventions, not harm elimination ones. And he concedes in his piece that mistakes have been made in the past with vaccines. Polio jabs were contaminated with the monkey virus, SV40. Vaccinations campaigns in Africa were problematic. Reused needles may have spread HIV and so on. Now he writes, the COVID jabs developed in 2020, wait for it, he says, and this is farcical, this is a journalist, Matt Ridley, writing in the Telegraph. He says, the COVID jabs of 2020 undoubtedly reduced the severity of the virus for vulnerable people and contributed to the defeat of the pandemic. Now I can safely say, and this is not conjecture, this is not opinion, I believe what I'm about to say is fact. There isn't a scintilla of evidence, not a smidgen, that any of the COVID jabs reduced the severity of the virus in people. And I don't believe there is a scintilla of evidence that the COVID jabs contributed to the defeat of the pandemic. And that is because it has not been proven, not by a long chalk, that there was a pandemic in the first place. He goes on to say, he goes on to concede that while he believes that the jabs did help, he says the vaccines were not as effective or as safe as we were led to believe at first. He goes on to write, some public health officials exaggerated the benefits and underplayed some of the risks. Thrombosis caused by the AstraZeneca vaccine and myocarditis caused by the messenger RNA vaccines of BioNTech and Pfizer have emerged as rare but serious side effects. The pandemic's legacy now seems to include greater public mistrust of vaccines in general. Measles is on the rise, he writes. More people are refusing the MMR jab. A recent UNICEF survey found vaccine confidence had fallen in 52 out of 55 countries. Again, this is Matt Ridley writing in the Telegraph today. The vaccines are a great thing, he says. They've done great things in the past. And the COVID jabs were very useful in reducing the severity of the virus, and the jabs contributed to the defeat of the pandemic. That's his claim. But he says they weren't as effective or as safe as we were led to believe. Health officials exaggerated the benefits and underplayed the risks. Okay. And then he goes on to lament that because of this, the pandemic's legacy now seems to have included, or now seems to include, greater public mistrust of vaccines, right? So we've summed up where he is. Who is responsible, he asks. Public health officials tend to blame anti-vax campaigners with lurid conspiracy theories about Bill Gates. And they're partly right to blame anti-vaxxers, he says. But perhaps they should also look in the mirror. Misinformation came from both sides, and by overpromising what the jabs could do and demanding vaccine mandates, many scientists and government officials contributed to scepticism. For example, he writes, the US government tried to reassure people about mRNA vaccines by implicitly criticizing live vaccines like those used for measles. The mRNA vaccines do not contain any live virus. Instead, they work by teaching our cells to make a harmless piece of a spike protein. So live vaccines are not harmless, exclaims this guy Matt Ridley. He goes on to quote Anthony Fauci, the US infectious disease guy, the top advisor to the US government during the COVID scam, of course, Fauci, who claimed in 2021 that vaccination makes it extremely unlikely, not impossible, but very, very low likelihood that the recipient will transmit COVID. In other words, you, the recipient of the jab, will become a dead end to the virus. Now, Ridley says in the Telegraph, this turned out to be wrong, as Fauci later admitted, with the jab doing very little to prevent reinfection and transmission. Preventing transmission was the excuse used for vaccinating children, he says, yet when this excuse evaporated, the policy continued anyway. For young age groups, wrote a clutch of doctors in the British Medical Journal in 2021, the harms of taking a vaccine are almost certain to outweigh the benefits. He then goes on in the piece to lament how authoritarianism made it worse. France criminalised criticism of vaccine mandates. Canada froze the bank accounts of truckers for protesting against vaccine mandates. And then he says part of the reason, and this is the thing that kills me, he lays the blame here for all of this fucking tyranny. He gives a pass to these governments. He says part of the reason governments were so reckless in forcing vaccines was probably, he says, that they wanted an exit from lockdowns, which were imposed for longer and more often than promised. Isn't that extraordinary? So he says vaccines were great in the past. Vaccines still are great. But sadly, there's a bit of vaccine scepticism around now. He says it's partly because of anti-vaxxers, but it's partly because of the tyranny that went on around the COVID jabs, false promises made about the jabs, exaggerations about the efficacy and safety of the jabs. These are very serious charges, right? But he gives them a pass. He says the reason they carried on as they did was because lockdowns, they were worried about lockdowns and they wanted to get out of them because they were going on for too long and they were becoming more frequent than had been promised. So that's why they forced an untested, an unsafe, an untried technology on billions of people. It was because they wanted to get out of lockdowns. I think you and I would call that horse manure. But he said there's a big problem here. There's a legacy. And the legacy is now that people have become more sceptical about vaccines more generally and are less likely, he reckons, in the future when technology rolls on and mRNA shots become available for maybe cancers and stuff, melanomas and whatnot, the people will say no thank you. And he says this is a bad thing. It's a bad thing, and it's all because scientists and governments played fast and loose with the truth, not because they wanted to harm people, but because, he said, they just wanted a quick way out of lockdown. What monumental bollocks. That's Matt Ridley writing in The Telegraph today. You're left wondering, what do they really know? You know? Listen, I want to say this, and I never know how to say this, so I'm just going to say it, okay? As best as I possibly can. And I'll say it later on too on the Richie Allen Show, and I might say it next Tuesday. No, I won't. I'll leave it. I'm going to leave you hanging. You'll be wondering now, what's he going to say? That's it for the papers today. We'll talk later on at 4 o'clock UK time. Thanks for listening to the podcast and thank you for sharing it too. For the meantime, or in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. If you are popping out to vote in one of these local authority elections in England or Wales, if you are, God love you, remember to take photographic ID with you, otherwise you won't be allowed to vote. Okay? From the BBG until 4 o'clock, bye.